Hello, hello, and welcome back to Organic Gardening for Beginners. My name is Jessica, the host of this show, obviously, and as well at the blog Homegrown Food and Flowers. I'm a vendor at my local farmer's market, have a little Etsy shop, and I have been in the garden for a very long time, and I love to share that with you guys once a week here on Tuesdays. So today it is the start of the month. We are almost 1 week in February, and today we're talking about what to do this month in the garden. It's sort of spring, not officially, but it kind of feels like it. I'm in Oregon, zone 8, and we have been having the mother of all false springs. 60 degrees, sunshiny, no rain. It's been amazing. However, that all ends tomorrow when the rain is coming back. We are back down into the 30s at nighttime, so we've been enjoying it. And even though that fall spring is about to end, there's still plenty to do. There's still lots that I've been doing that I want to share with you guys that can help inspire you to get something started, figure out what to focus on this month to really gear you up for the springtime. Okay, so I'm sure if you have spent 5 minutes, maybe even less, on any sort of social media platform or YouTube or anything like that, all you're seeing is stuff about seed starting and soil blocking and garden planning and what to sow. And today is some of that too. We are no different over here because it's so hard to take an extended break from the garden. And so any chance to get out there, any glimmer of hope of the spring to come, we want to take advantage of it. At least personally, I want to take advantage of it. And I'm assuming you do too, if you're listening in. So we're going to talk about what to sow because believe it or not, there are plenty of things that you can get going as of now. It's like the switch flipped. February is go time for a lot of different crops. There were some that you could plant in January, and if you didn't, don't worry about it. It's not too late, except for a very few annuals or slow-growing perennials, but there's still plenty of stuff now. So this is what I am starting, as well as what you can start. Even if you are in a warmer climate, if you're in a colder climate, chances are you can maneuver within this list. Even if it's snowy, if you can get something going undercover, if you're in a warmer climate where it's not even freezing, then plant away. There's tons of stuff you can grow. So what I'm talking about are primarily greens, like, you know, your standard lettuce, leafy greens, spinach, chard, stuff like that. You can do Asian greens like bok choy and mustard, things like that, mizuna, different kinds of salad greens. Kale, good old standby kale. I never get tired of kale. I grow that stuff year round. And kale, if you planted it last summer or spring and it is still in your garden, it's overwintering, it's still totally good to harvest off of. And if you've gotten frozen weather or freezing temperatures, I should say, then chances are it tastes even better because some of the sugars in the leaf are more available, and so it makes the plant taste a little bit sweeter and more tender. But one thing to note is kale and most cabbage crops are actually biennials, which means they do all their growing in the first year, and then in the second year they produce their seeds and die. And so that overwintered kale that you have is still totally good to eat. You're going to get a few months more of harvest off of it, but eventually, as soon as the temperatures start to warm up in the spring, you're going to see it start to bolt, which means go to seed. And across almost all of these brassicas, kale, cabbage, broccoli, stuff like that, cauliflower, it's a tall stalk from the center of the plant that has little yellow flowers on it. I think there are some that put out more of a purplish flower or more of a white flower. In general, it's going to be a yellow flower. Very cute. Pollinators love it. Nice, delicate little blossoms. But that is a sign that the plant is on its way out the door. You can cut that off as soon as you see it, and that will slow down the seed production so that you can potentially get a little more production off the plant before it's done. But really, at that point, what I would recommend is either leave it to go to seed or take it out and replant. If you let it go to seed, be advised, you will now have thousands of seeds throughout your garden because one plant is going to put out hundreds of seeds. It puts out these long, skinny seed pods that will burst open once they are fully mature, and then you will have kale forever and ever, and you'll never have to plant again because the seeds volunteer so freely. It self-sows like crazy. So just an FYI, if you want a ton of kale, let it go to seed. It'll pop up wherever, and you can always take out the seedlings that don't work for you. If you want to be more selective of where you have it in the garden, or you have a small space and you can't dedicate that much to these volunteer plants, then make sure you don't let the seed pods mature on the plant. And you can eat the seed pods. I've seen people do that. They kind of fry them up like another, you know, crunchy veggie, throw some garlic on there and make a little stir fry out of it. And the leaves, you can do the same, like chop the whole seed stalk off, toss it in, saute it, and there you go. Have it with your meal. And so anyways, little tangent there. So all of your greens, your brassicas, all of those things you can start right now. Broccoli is a great one to sow from seed right now because it matures best when it's gotten a nice, slow, cool start in the early spring, as opposed to pushing that boundary of summer and the warmer temperatures. Same goes for cauliflower. A lot of cabbages need a long, slow season to grow to prevent cracking and pest damage. They can be very vulnerable to the cabbage moths and aphids that are going to be popping as soon as the weather warms up. So put those on your list if you like them. And then additionally, alliums, this is the onion family, like onions, chives, shallots, these can all be started from seed. These could have been started from seed last month too. It's not too late now. I just planted my chives and shallots maybe a week or so ago. And onions I planted from sets back in the fall, so those ones are already taken care of. But this is a great time to sow your allium. And with chives especially, instead of planting or sowing seeds in a line or, you know, with a little bit more space in between them, what I personally like to do is use a 4-inch pot or a yogurt cup, something that's just a little bit on the larger side, and sprinkle maybe a half a teaspoon, I would say, of seeds over the surface and then let them all come up. And it's going to be a lot of plants in one pot. But what you can then do at planting time is break that clump into half or even fourths, depending on if it's chives or something like onions and shallots, and then plant those little clumps out into the garden where they're going to spread on their own. Now, if you do this with onions, obviously that's going to be a very close planting, but that's great for something like scallions or green onions. If you want the onions to actually bulb up, then you need to plant them farther apart. But for chives, they're going to be totally fine. And the same goes for shallots, because those will bulb kind of like garlic does, but not as big as onions. So you can get away with having them closer together. It's going to produce a smaller shallot, or you can just harvest the greens, or you can take that 4-inch pot and then individually transplant out each shallot, which takes, you know, a minute to do, but I find it more efficient than putting one seed in one cell in a plant tray, because they're just so small to start and they are a little bit slow growing. And sometimes, especially with onions or chives, people like to let the seeds grow until the greens are maybe 3 inches tall indoors, and then cut them off down to about an inch and let them grow back so that it produces a nice stocky plant. And so you are potentially going to have this plant inside for a couple of months. And that takes up a lot of space if I've just got one chive seed or one onion seed in each cell. And so I keep them all together in that 4-inch pot. And that just makes sense for me. So get your alliums in the ground indoors or undercover outside, and you will be able to start harvesting those chives, those shallots this summer. They are delicious. I cannot wait. And chives will overwinter. Just a heads up, they might look a little sad and pathetic in your colder climates, but they won't die. They are a perennial. They will continue to spread as the years go, and eventually you can just divide them with a shovel each season. You can give away clumps. You can move them to other areas of your garden, which is one thing I like to do when I have extras if nobody I know needs some, because they put out these beautiful purple flowers in the spring that the bees love. And so the more I can have, the better. And alliums tend to lend some amount of pest protection to crops because they have such a strong aroma that it can deter a lot of pests. Not all, you know, don't get me wrong. I have a picture of a snail crawling on top of this allium bloom. So it doesn't make your garden invincible, but I still like to scatter them everywhere. The next thing that you can get out into the garden or start indoors to transplant are snap peas, which I tend to not necessarily follow the rules with peas, whether that's snap peas, snow peas, sweet peas, where typically you'll hear they don't like to be transplanted because they have a long taproot. I almost always start at least my sweet peas indoors and transplant them, and I have not had a problem growing them. So if you're nervous about that, if you've heard this as well, that peas don't like to be transplanted, one thing you can do is use a toilet paper roll or a paper towel roll that you've cut in half and use that as like your plantable pot, because they are relatively narrow and relatively tall. And so if you fill the roll with dirt, soil, seed starting mix, and then plant in there, then you can pop the whole thing in the ground and the taproot will have had a few more inches than in a typical 4-inch pot to get that depth that it needs. And then you don't have to take it out of the pot to plant it. And so you kind of skip that transplant shock altogether. Does it make a difference? Who knows? In my experience, I do just fine transplanting from a normal pot, but just putting those little tips I've learned over the years out there for you to try and see what works for you. And snap peas, for whatever reason, I typically just direct sow those even early in the season when it's cold, probably because I plant so many because it's a total favorite of my family. If you plant too early and it's too cold and too rainy, they can struggle to germinate just because of the soil temperature or because they start to rot. So use your intuition on this. If it's just been pouring down rain where you live, then maybe hold off a little bit. If it is kind of like where we've been with this fall spring that has allowed the soil to dry out a little bit and it is going to start raining, but not forever and ever, I'm going to start planting them, or sowing them, I should say, straight in the garden starting this week for my snap peas. Whereas my sweet peas, I am starting indoors, and I'm going to get into the flower side in just a second. But peas are a great early crop. They can tolerate some frost. If you get a light frost still throughout the spring, if you're going to get covered in a very heavy frost or ice or snow, maybe not so much. I've never lived in the Northeast, so those big, heavy snows, or even the Midwest, I don't have personal experience with. So that one, I have to say, use your judgment again. But as far as in the warmer climates or in the Northwest, you can definitely get away with planting your snap peas now or very soon. And then you can try root crops such as radish and beets and carrots. The soil's a little bit cold still, at least in my area, for germination, where a lot of these crops prefer at least 45, 50 degrees of soil temperature in order to germinate. So if you put them under cover, like a low tunnel, greenhouse, cold frame, that can bring the soil up just to that minimum requirement. But give it a shot. Carrot and beet seeds are very cheap, especially radish. Carrots take a little bit longer to germinate. So if you do try them and you don't see them popping up in a week or two, don't stress, because they are just slower germinators. Radish can be a really good indicator crop because those guys pop up in like 3 days. So if you plant all three and you're not even seeing your radish, then that could be a good indicator that your soil temperature is just not quite there yet. And beets fall somewhere in between as far as germination. If I remember correctly, usually see them in about a week, and those are so easy to grow. So if you are just chomping at the bit, try throwing some of those out there. Maybe you plant some lettuce and some chives and radish and get a little salad garden going, especially if you've got like a small little cold frame. And that can be a great way to get out there and see just how far you can push your season. You guys know I'm all about experimenting to see what will work, even if on paper it doesn't make sense or historically it doesn't make sense. Try it anyways, see what happens. Maybe you'll learn something new that can inform all your years to come in the garden, and you get an early salad that way. Okay, let's shift our focus to the flower side, which I love starting flowers early at this point. It might feel really, really early to start flowers indoors, but there are so many, more than most people realize, so many flowers that can tolerate frost. And I credit flower farmer Lisa Mazin Ziegler for all of my knowledge about this, because she is a flower farmer out in North Carolina, Virginia, East Coast somewhere, I forget. And she like has made her living talking about cool flowers, as she calls them, which are cold tolerant flowers that you can plant in the fall and overwinter, or plant out super, super early and get them blooming sooner than you normally could if you wait until the last frost date. So These are flowers like Orlaya, which you've heard me talk about a ton and is not a very well-known flower, but it's so beautiful and the pollinators love it. Scabiosa, also known as pincushion flower, is another very pollinator attractive flower that I feel like almost nobody plants or knows about. I'm always telling people at my farmer's market booth about scabiosa because they are just so pretty. The butterflies love them. This also includes dianthus, calendula, nigella, bells of Ireland, which can be a little bit tricky to germinate. I've succeeded at it a time or two, but it does take a little bit of babying. Also, first-year flowering perennials that need a long growing season, like hollyhocks or lupin or columbine or even milkweed, those ones are a really great flower to start now. They are on my to-do list for today, as a matter of fact. I have had my some of my seeds soaking overnight, like my sweet peas, which I'll talk about, and also my lupin, because these seeds... And these aren't the only ones. This can apply to lots of different ones. Beans work for this too. When you have a seed that is on the larger side and has a tougher or thicker seed coat, such as a pea, if you soak them for a few hours up to overnight, I usually push it on the longer side, it can help speed up germination because the water has penetrated the seed coat and made it easier for the sprout to then come through. And so if you soak them beforehand, then it can just make it a little bit easier to get it to germinate if you're doing it indoors. If you're planting outside, such as snap peas, I don't typically soak them because it's rainy and the soil's wet and it just kind of takes care of it for me anyways. But if I'm starting indoors, then I definitely do. I find it just results in better performance, really. So, I need to jump back for just a second. So with these cool flowers, what you're going to do is start them indoors now-ish and let them grow until somewhere around a month before your last spring frost, which if you listen to last week's episode, we talked all about that and what that means for your planting dates and protection that you may or may not need to give to your plants. It's the plant's days to maturity and how long of a season it needs. So if you didn't listen to that, it was an awesome episode. You guys loved it. That one had such high rates of listenership. So go back and listen to that one. That was episode 42. But your cool flowers, you can plant out before your last spring frost, as opposed to something like a warm season flower like cosmos, sunflowers, zinnias, some of those really common ones that need to go out after your last spring frost because they can't handle those colder temperatures. So if you're planting these flowers out in, say, March, early April, what you can do is, depending on what zone you're in, if you're in a slightly higher zone, for me, for example, like I said, I'm in zone 8, I am going to kind of wing it on if I need to provide protection for them. And by protection, I mean something like a row cover. Maybe a low tunnel where I'm using PVC pipe to suspend plastic over the garden beds to keep the frost off the plants. If you're in a colder zone, you might need to default to those row covers. You know, really, it depends, honestly, on how low your temperatures get. If you have things like hail or strong winds in the spring that can be damaging to your little baby plants. But in any case, these flowers are going to use, just like the brassicas that I mentioned earlier, they're going to use these cooler days to really establish themselves, establish their root system, so that once the days start to get a little bit longer, a little bit warmer, that's when the top growth is really going to take off and they'll start to get taller, they'll leaf out more, and you'll get really nice strong blooms as well as sturdy plants. Some of these flowers will even perform better being planted early or in the fall, as opposed to a traditional spring planting where something like dianthus, if it gets too warm of temperatures, it can be a little bit of a floppy plant. Whereas if you start it in the fall and let it overwinter, it produces a nice sturdy plant that still has tall stems for cutting, but just an overall more robust plant than a spring planted one. So just a little check-in at this point, because I know I've given you a ton of information. Things you can sow right now: leafy greens, brassicas like cabbage, kale, broccoli, cauliflower, bok choy, mustard greens. You can do alliums like onions, chives, and shallots, snap peas, or root crops like carrots, radish, and beets. They all might need varying levels of protection, but these ones can all do well in the cooler temperatures and or totally thrive in frosty temperatures like kale. On the flower side, we have talked about the cold hardy flowers that grow best in the cooler spring and will bloom for you nice and early, late spring, early summer. And then there are the first year flowering perennials that, or second year for that matter, that need the nice long season like hollyhock and lupin and columbine. I can't forget about snapdragons. I almost did. Snapdragons are another cold hardy flower that can bloom all summer long, but they love to get started in these cooler temperatures of spring, and they are a little bit slow growing indoors. They are an itsy bitsy seed. They're pretty finicky to sow just because they're so small, but after that, they are relatively easy to grow, just slow. For me anyways, they take a little while. So throw snapdragons on that list with the calendula, nigella, and orlia and all that, and you can easily start those indoors now. The last flower I want to mention are sweet peas that take about 14-ish weeks from seed to bloom. And sweet peas are a funny little flower because they love to have cooler soil temperatures, but they also love full sun. So they will grow best for you if you either fall sow them in a warmer climate. That's what I did in California, and it worked out so beautifully. It was amazing. I sowed them in November, and then they were starting to bloom by, I think it was April, I want to say, maybe May, and they bloomed for forever because they had gotten so established in the cooler temperatures. But I don't have that luxury right now, and so I am starting them from seed also today. I started soaking the seeds yesterday. And your sweet peas are just like the snap peas. They are somewhat cold tolerant. They can handle a light frost. It's possible that there will be just a tiny bit of frost damage on the tips of the tendrils and the leaves, but it's not going to kill them, you know, provided that they're more than, say, a couple weeks old. So I start them all indoors and I transplant them out, and that will get nice early blooms for you that, as long as you keep them deadheaded, sweet peas will bloom for at least a month. Again, in my experience, because I'm always out there cutting a bouquet. I'm cutting off the blooms that I didn't cut for a flower and have started to go to seed. It can be a little bit of a time-consuming chore because there are just so many flowers being put out, but totally worth it because sweet peas just smell amazing. They look beautiful. The pollinators love them, especially hummingbirds. I had a whole cluster of hummingbirds that came every single day to feed on my last stand of sweet peas down in California before we moved. It was amazing. So sweet peas are a great one to start now. And if you... I suppose this is a little bit of a tangent, but if you want the most sweet pea blooms possible, once you get your sweet pea plant up to about 8 inches tall, you can cut them back a little bit down to about half that size, and that will force some more branching from the plant so that it makes more branches that will then have blooms on them. This process is called pinching. And you can apply it to zinnias, to cosmos, the sweet peas I just mentioned. There are lots of different flowers and plants that you can do it with. And really, it comes from the flower farming world, where the goal is to have the most blooms or blooming stems per plant. And you don't have to. Your sweet peas will be totally fine if you don't do it. It's just a little tip I want to pass on. Okay, seed sowing aside, there are lots of other things that you can do either in the garden or garden adjacent this month. And one thing that became abundantly clear to me last weekend at the farmer's market was there are so many workshops coming up, so many Master Gardener events, your county extension office events. I was chatting with tons of people about it. There's a workshop going on not far from me about invasive plants and how to get rid of them. There's another one going on about native plants and how to plant them and encourage pollinators. We have a seed exchange coming up at my farmer's market. Granted, it's not till next month, but you know, you got to keep it on your calendar so that you don't double book yourself. So if you are wanting to learn or network or meet people in your same area and you don't want to do it through a book or online, you prefer an in-person event, go start asking around. Go to your local nursery, call up your extension office. I think almost every county has one. See what your master gardeners are doing, because chances are you can find free or low cost education events that are really starting to pick up at this point because it's, you know, right before the season. And so people who teach, who educate, community members, they are all wanting to get out there and help newer gardeners come up with as much knowledge as they can get to have a successful season. So just a little tip, start doing a Google search, ask around, see what's out there for learning about whatever your new topic is. Personally, I am learning all about medicinal herbs this year. I have a list of things I'm learning about, but this is one of my biggies because ever since I was a kid, I've always dreamed of having that cute little herbal apothecary, you know, little jars of bits and bobs and remedies and all that stuff. And this is the year, dang it, I'm planting my herb garden. I've always grown, you know, calendula and mint and the very basics, echinacea, stuff like that. But I'm going all in. I found this company, they're down in Southern Oregon, called Strictly Medicinal. I think it's Strictly Medicinal Seed Company or Herb Company, something like that. And they are a family farm. They've been around for forever. Super high quality seeds. So I got a shipment from them of a handful of new to me herbs that I've never grown before. And the reason I bring this up is because if one of the things you want to learn about is herbs or medicinals or natives for that matter, a lot of these plants are slow to get established. And so if you can't find seedlings or want to stay on the budget, if you want to stay on budget by starting from seed, now is a great time to do it because they are slow growers. They take a while to get established. And so if you start now, chances are you'll have a decent sized seedling by the time it warms up for spring. So I am doing this exact thing. I've got some mallow seeds soaking because they need a little bit of treatment before you sow them. Mullein or mullein are one of the seeds that I'm growing. Comfrey, we're going to plant that around our fruit trees. I've got toothache plant. I cannot wait for that one because it's got such a cool looking little flower that you can actually harvest for a cut flower, but then it has medicinal properties as well. So this little segment here is a little bit of a combo of there's always something to learn about, whether it's in person or through books or other seed companies. And there are some really cool plants that you can start from seed that you might not have thought about already. So stay tuned. I'm sure I will tell you guys all about my medicinal little herb garden. And I can't wait. It's always so much fun to learn stuff. Alrighty. So last minute garden beds. If you need to get in more garden beds, this is a really good time to do it. Again, using myself as an example, I've talked about this before. I'm putting in a cut flower garden specifically for cut flower production. Normally, I do all of my companion planting, all my flowers, all my veggies, herbs together. But this year, I'm experimenting with a pure cut flower production bed that I will be putting, I'm establishing it over an existing lawn. So there's just grass there right now. And I'm going to cover it with cardboard, cover that with some compost, and then plant straight through it. This is how I have established many, many beds in the past. This one's a little different because this is like lawn slash old pasture. So I don't know exactly what the weeds are going to hand to me, but I have my wood chips. I will mulch heavily and hand weed where needed and just see what happens. So I'm going to I'm going to establish that now and tarp it with just a waterproof tarp. While my flowers that I just mentioned I'm starting indoors are growing, and then once they're ready, I'll transplant them straight out and we'll see how it goes. But I'm really excited for it. I don't need another garden bed. I've got plenty to do, but I can't resist and I just want to go for it. Tree expert, but it's worth mentioning that this is also a really great time to plant fruit trees. It's what we are personally doing because the plants are dormant. You can buy them as a bare root plant. And that means that they're not actively growing right now. So you are transitioning them from the pot or container that they have been grown in so far into whatever their permanent location is in your garden. And then they'll kind of wake up with the season and start to leaf out and establish and all that good stuff. As long as your ground isn't frozen, you can plant fruit. We, fortunately enough, live about 10 minutes away from this really awesome U-Pick farm that has an adjacent nursery where they sell backyard fruit like apples and blueberries and raspberries and all that good stuff. So we are going to get those in the ground this month. And so I've also been reading a ton about fruit production and backyard orcharding and all that. And so I know that this is a good month, and that's about the extent of my knowledge for fruit. I know that it'll take a few years before we get anything, and I'm okay with that. That's, as they say, the best time to plant a tree was 10 years ago, and the second best time is today. So we are going with that old motto. But I am no fruit expert. I am relying on books and YouTube to teach me. Epic Gardening has some really good fruit growing videos. Granted, he's in a totally different climate than me now, but he still has some really awesome information. So I just want to put that disclaimer out there. I am a very, very, very novice orchardist. Don't even have an orchard yet, but it's in the plan. It's in the plan. I'm just going to grow everything. One of these days I'll list it all out, but I'm going to pack this 2 acres with so many plants that there's no grass left. Okay, guys, on that note, I always get giddy at the end of these because I just get so revved up to go plant and do and share, and I just love it. So for those of you who always stick to the end, thank you for putting up with me. I love this show. It is so much fun. That's it for today. I will talk to you next week. Bye.